Hello and welcome to the Paper Player Podcast, where we cover all things pertaining to paper and in-person Magic the Gathering. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined by my three co-hosts, Jeff, Josh, and JB. JB, tell me how your pre-release went.
My pre-release went really, really poorly. I didn't do well in any of the pre-releases I did, which is pretty typical for me because I'm very bad at building decks. Mm-hmm. And I usually just need you to do all the building for me, Tony.
Yeah, probably the piloting too.
Yeah, maybe.
Josh, you pull anything awesome?
I didn't pull like anything spectacular. I was hoping to like get fetch lands. I did get the Evoke subtly and the red one, which is called Fury. I got both in my pool, so I played blue red. I also had the Flying Affinity Thoughtcast guy, Thought or Monitor or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was really impressed with that card. That was probably the best card in my deck. Even in a non like affinity shell, I was playing like very splashy artifacts. I did get to the finals where I lost to Jeff. We had a very close game one, and game two was kind of just a blowout. But I had a great time. It felt great to be back playing limited Magic with people I didn't know, and everyone had a good time.
Yeah, that Thought Monitor, that card is just like Moldrifter. That's how I view that card.
The card's so good.
Yeah. Jeff, I know you've been posting about like awesome. You had some sick pulls, dude.
My pulls were really cool. My Friday night pre-release wasn't great. I think I went like 2-2 overall, but I got like a foil Cauldra. I opened, I think, a total of like 3 foil fetches plus an old border Aired Mesa. I actually just recently pulled the old bordered Squirrel Commander, the mythic one. That thing's like 50, 60 bucks right now. I built a really quick squirrel deck with it, because why not? But the pre-release overall, like I said, Friday was pretty bad, but I went on Sunday and I went undefeated Sunday morning, and then went 1-1 in the second one I did. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoy this set a lot.
Yeah, so with the pre-release that the majority of us attended, there was companion issues. Was that true at the other pre-releases you guys went to? Because I mean, we had to do like a repair minimum 3 times per round.
I didn't experience any at the 2 on Sunday, but to be fair, the events were a lot smaller. It was an 8-man and then a 4-man. Okay. So, like, I feel it's really hard to mess up those pairings. Friday, that we had, what, like 64 people in our pre-release?
Yeah.
64?
Yep.
Wow. It was super big.
It was a packed house, and not to mention
that
it's like...
That was Friday night?
Yeah.
There was a lot of complaints about that.
There's a couple things. One, the prize payout wasn't structured in a correct way. So it was definitely top heavy, which is fine. But the breakdown, I just think, was mismanaged, which, you know, it's okay. I brought that up to the shopkeep and they did some adjustments to kind of remedy that. And then on top of that, the companion app with so many people. So I'm going to talk about companion just briefly. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of issues I have with it, and I think what companion should do, and this was suggested to me by a friend, and it should just be your companion app, your account has a QR code and stores are provided with a scanner to scan you into the event. Because right now the system that we have is we're putting in like 6-digit codes and we're depending on, you know, user error, right? Or users to do it, and then it just leads into user error. So I had a guy, showed him the code because everybody got kicked out of the old event and then they had like emergency make a new event. And as I was showing my code to people, I was watching people type in the wrong event code and then getting into a different event somewhere across the country.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just you just slip your fingers, you fat finger a number and you just hit enter and it's a mistake.
I want to like the app. I really, I have had nothing but positive experiences with it, but like, I can't, you know, that you are providing a real like solution. So
it would just be easy. Like every store would get a unique scanner or what have you. And then, or you can like, as far as like a QR code thing, just cause like, here's my phone QR code, beep, I'm in, you know, now I know that I received your payment. I can scan you in now, done. Rather than like, they have this weird checklist system where they were, you know, paying people, or you would pay and then you put the code in and then they would have to like wait, or you go into like a queue, and then like that can get confusing, and especially with the emergency
repair,
with the emergency second event, like they had to recreate it. I mean, honestly, somebody could have just ripped them off. They could have just sat around and just be like, all right, because they had to like rush everybody in, you know, so they could just like, I'll just type in the second code and now I'm in, and they have no idea if I paid or not. Because they were being really diligent on the first half of it. And then the second half of it, it was just like, oh, this event blew up in our face. We have 5 minutes to like repair this. Everybody type in this code. Mm-hmm.
64 people. So
yeah, and like I said, people were fat fingering it, and then a lot of people are having issues with the app overall. I think with Android, the app does not work as well as it does with the iOS software. So I was watching people that had the Android constantly have to close the app and reopen it to do things in between, because if you screwed something up, like it just kept kicking you back and forth. So there's a little bit of a glitch. I didn't see that from the iOS people, but I saw that definitely from Android. Mm-hmm. And then just overall, in the middle of the pairings, people would just randomly get kicked out. They're like, oh, I just got kicked out of the event. Like, what happened? So that kept happening too. So they had to like retype it in. And that's why we had so many of the repairs. So I'm not sure if that's more of a store owner thing or a shopkeep thing, or is it the app itself?
For one, I think that there is a very like steep learning curve with it, and that once you become familiar with it, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah.
So here's my problem, is that when I joined, I got in properly, and then they did a repair, and then I got in, I tried to get in again, and I was still stuck in the old match, and my app wouldn't update for whatever reason. And I sat there refreshing it multiple times, closed it out, reopened it, and I just couldn't get it to work. And then finally, after about 5 minutes, it just decided it was going to work again.
That's definitely, I think, the app, because I've had something like that happen to me in the past.
Yeah. So the app,
but, like, it didn't make it, it didn't actually keep me in the old event, but like it was still showed that I was in it is what was happening. Yeah. But I was still able to play in the current event that I was in.
Yes.
And like it didn't deteriorate that.
The app has like some really nice applications. I love the idea of never having to go to a pairings board, having to look up your pairings or anything like that. It's just on your phone. Now, will this app be great for like a larger scale tournament? Probably not.
I think they're going to have to go back to slips if they do big events.
Well, you're going to have to do slips. And, well, there's that aspect, too. If somebody, like, scumbags you, obviously you can, like, clarify that. And then, I mean, that would be a really crappy move to do. But the whole slip idea is fine. Yeah, for sure. But then, like, if that happens and you get caught doing it, auto ban from the game. Like, just make the consequences so severe that you cannot do that. And obviously, if it's a mistake, that's one thing. But if someone just, like, what I noticed what I was doing, I was going, putting in the result, and I was showing it to my opponent. Does this look right? And having them hit confirm.
That's very gentleman of you.
It's like, is this okay? Hit confirm. Mm-hmm. That way it's like, I put in the result, and I'm showing you, does this look correct to you? Hit confirm.
Yeah, that's what I did as well.
Yeah,
that's clever, and I can't believe I didn't think of that. So I should.
It's just like the best way, so you don't have like this like, oh, some guy rages from the table, gets on the app faster than you do, and then you got to run to the judge and then have this weird interaction. So this is probably not going to work for a large-scale event just because of the event code system. And right now we're at a point where we don't know what's on the table for like what paper competitive Magic's going to look like. But I can tell you right now, Companion is not going to work. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things coming up for Modern. I'm calling this the Modern Makeover. There is so many new decks. And it's the one thing that's unfortunate about this is if you're not playing online, all you're seeing is results and not being able to actually physically play. So a lot of these like communities that we deal with, a lot of the majority of people that show up to these FNMs and such, they're primarily just paper player. A lot of people avoid any online play, which is fine. But realistically, you're seeing a lot of these events happening and you're seeing a ton of deck lists come out, but yet we still don't have the cards. This is just like a weird consequence of having to push this back a week, but not changing the release date from Magic Online to kind of follow along suit.
The paper meta is always very, very, very different than the online meta.
I would say for sure. In Legacy, that's true, just because some of the cards are so prohibitively expensive that you end up having very big decks that don't make showing on paper, purely because there's certain cards in there that are just too expensive for people to play, like lands.
I also think that people play their pet Magic cards when they go to FNM, so like it doesn't matter.
I also feel like that depends on the store, though, because
yeah, that's
like
true.
Where you go, like there are more competitive people. In Modern, it is a lot easier to like obtain a deck and have it online. Like the online meta for Modern is pretty similar to like what FNMs are like. I agree with JB about Legacy though. Like online, you know, you can buy a Legacy deck for like $20 versus real life where the same deck cost $800. But Modern, it's just the Wild West right now. Like, you can play whatever you want.
Right. So people are gonna play their like pet Magic cards right now.
For sure. Yeah, when I was watching some streams, the biggest issue I saw people having was the rent bots. I mean, that's primarily what Magic Online has just kind of become. The rent bots were just like people had to, you just had to sit there and spam refresh like 50 times because you had to wait for someone to return the card so you can get the cards.
I remember when Stoneforge Mystic got unbanned, and I was playing online at the time, and like using the rent bots is like super hard to get Stoneforge Mystics.
yeah, it's one of those cards. It's just, it's difficult. But let's kind of get into the decks that we've been seeing. I know I've asked you guys kind of suggest, and I know we'll get into Urza Saga and where we think it's going to be, and then kind of Raghavan. Those are the two majorly hyped cards, as well as Grief as well. But I just kind of want to go over some of the decks that you guys suggested, and I guess the first one that we came out with is the, we're looking at 5-0 deck list from the Modern Leagues that are on MTGO, and right now we have Death and Taxes, and it's a pretty exciting list because we're seeing different styles of cards inside of them, and the number one card I can see right off the bat that I enjoy the most is going to be Esper Sentinels, and card's highly priced, and it's just a fantastic card. I mean, I think as a collective, we knew this card was going to be good, and I'm glad to see it getting played, so... When you guys look at this deck list, what is like the biggest standout card other than Esper Sentinel?
For me, it would be Solitude, because I see it being played in a lot of blue-white control decks as well, which is really exciting to me with Ephemerate. And I actually worked really, really hard to pick up all four of mine, thinking that it would be pretty important for those decks.
It is a really good card. Like, Swords to Plowshares is always going to be better than Path. Just simply, like, you never want to ramp your opponent. So, now you can just do it for free.
Right.
And, occasionally you'll have Althalia and have to pay one. But I think at that point, most of the time you're just waiting to cast it anyways. I really like this card because Swords to Plowshares is always better than Path to Exile. Simply you don't want to ramp your opponent. And this card is just... I mean, it's insane. It's free. I feel like all the free spells are being played right now, but I still think this one and probably the blue one, or not the blue one, sorry, the black one are probably the best two out right now. But this in combination with Thalia and getting around the tax is nice. I mean, you have Noble, so it's got lifelink. I don't know. This deck just sounds fun.
It also has the ability you can just cast it on turn 5 or turn 4 or 5. You can just cast it, and it's still going to be a huge power play. Flashes in, exile your biggest creature, go in, you gain life, and then go block something else. Just blow. It's it has blowout potential.
That was my thought as well for the control decks, is that it has the top end. So you're also playing the Ephemerate game where you can nail them pretty good, or you can just cast the card.
Yeah. I think that one's pretty underrated.
It took me a second to realize this deck was mono white, but
yep.
I guess there's Noble Hierarch in here, but that card's honorably white. So
there's some green sideboard cards too, Collector Oof and
Collector Company. So this is a green white deck.
It's just primarily white.
I do.
Yeah, the Noble Hierarch's just there to. I mean, it has plenty of turn one plays, but it seems like you want to get to the Archon as fast as possible. Even not even Archon, but just Skyclave, just because of how the format's kind of shaping up. You want Skyclave to hit key cards such as Hardened Scales or all those the Ozolith, all these random 1-mana artifacts that are kind of being really important. Or even against Tron, just hitting their Expedition map, just you're on the play, you go Noble Hierarch, go, and they go land or Urza land Expedition map. You're all right, I'll tag that. Now they're oh, I don't have Tron anymore.
Underworld Cookbook.
That too. That card's amazing.
We'll get to that one.
I had that in my sealed pool over the weekend, and I was really surprised with that card.
Man, I can't believe Sword of Fire and Ice is $52. My goodness.
It's a long-standing favorite. I mean, it's not easy, hard to believe, because it's also an EDH card, too. People want it for their EDH decks.
All right, here we go. We got another deck, Living End, that's featuring the new Shardless Agent that got into the format from Legacy, essentially, and then some of the... I don't think that's anything new inside the deck, other than the Shardless Agent.
There's Brazen Towers.
I mean, that's been out for, a year and a half now, 2 years?
I haven't seen this deck in 2 years, so I had no idea what this deck looks like.
I feel like the list I also found is maybe a little outdated because it is from June 5th. So, I feel like they've changed some more with this deck.
Mm-hmm. I over the weekend, I did happen to get a set of Shardless Agents.
Nice.
I think the best part about this is so the list that we're looking at now, people forgot that Fire and Ice got reprinted, and that card also has a 4 CMC, but it also, it's a 2-mana card. So you kind of get to cheat with it just like you do with Brazen Borrower, where your Cascade cards ignore it because the CMC, while it's cascading, is obviously the combined total of what Fire and Ice is, which is 4, or Brazen Borrower. So you get to play these 2-mana interaction spells rather than just like hoping to God that like I gotta survive to turn three. I gotta survive to turn three. And now with Shardless Agent, Violent Outburst, like it's so much easier. And I've seen even Ardent playlists where they're playing just straight blue white or a Jeskai. So the Living End archetype has kind of shifted just from the old Jund standard where it used to be Violent Outburst and what was the red black one? The red black cascade, Demonic Dread.
Yeah.
Which that one was kind of not great because you needed a target. That was like the big downside. So if nobody played a creature, you couldn't use that card. But with Violent Outburst, you just cast it. Ardent Pleas the Enchantment, you just cast it. And then now with Shardless Agent, especially because the Shardless Agent also comes into play after the Living End is resolved. This list existed before, but all they've done is taken out the As Foretold stuff, and they've just boarded in, or they just play Shardless Agent in the main now. Man, I hate this board.
I want to say most of the lists like that run like Living End and stuff now, aren't they running the Rhino card and stuff like that?
Oh, there's a Cascade deck. It's not. It's
yeah.
Not Living End.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, that Cascade deck. I don't know if we have that. We're gonna talk about that one today, but just Rhino deck because we call it like Team of Rhinos or something.
I saw that deck was either beautiful, like it went like surprisingly well, or it was disastrously bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't hit your Cascade spells, it's really bad.
Right.
Which, you know, I don't know how many of those decks are playing, but yeah. All right, and also, okay, so this deck is featuring. It is featuring. This is Affinity. This is a featuring. Oh, does this list not have
this? Is the one that I submitted. This is like me with my not spending any money into Modern right now. I saw a budget Affinity list, like true Affinity. This actually has cards that say Affinity for artifacts on it.
The only thing I would do from an update standpoint of this deck is probably play for Arcbound Ravager, even though that's not as budget. It seems like just such an easy upgrade to do because there are so many copies of that card just loaming around.
Right, there's so many easy upgrades to this deck. You could also put
you're
in.
You're also missing the B.
Steel Overseer could be in there too.
I was about to say you really need that B in there because that card is.
Yeah, and I said that during preview season. I was like, watch, Affinity is gonna come back.
There's a million different Affinities right now, but like I think that's a solid deck to even like buy into Modern with for like if you $100 budget. Like this is the list I put. Like the list I put is like $100.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely nuts. I love that there's an Affinity deck that's budget. Like, you can build a Modern deck for under $100, and, like, it's not top tier. Like, dude, you can obviously make upgrades to it that can make it completely busted, but realistically, it's still competitive. Whereas you go back before Modern Horizons, there just wasn't a competitive Affinity deck ever since Mox Opal has been banned. So, Affinity players, this is your time to shine. Everybody who's got the pimped out stuff, bring it out, man.
Yep. And like it's fun. Sometimes, like a lot of people enjoy just vomiting their hand out on the field on turn one.
And in
like,
doubt, jank them out.
Right. Yeah. That's yeah, what I'm on the jank plan in Modern right now.
Yeah.
I think this is the more up to date Affinity list that has Urza in it. So it's running stuff like Metallic Rebuke, and it's not so much pure Affinity, but it's all like artifact based in the same idea.
Well, it's got. So this is
an actual Urza deck.
This is an Urza Saga deck with Urza, Thought Monitor, Hex Parasite, Emery. This deck, the whole purpose is just getting maximum value and just kind of burying your opponent by not understanding what Urza Saga is actually bringing to the deck. And then also you have Urza, the one from Modern Horizons with Lord High Artificer. That card's a bomb. I think people kind of forgot about that card since like Food Synergies went completely out of the format. That
card is so, they should have never, they just kept throwing words on it.
Yeah.
However, like, what was it? I played Cube once and I hit my Emrakul off my Urza and I felt really great.
Yeah. I mean,
I bet.
It makes your entire deck, essentially all your artifacts, mock Sapphires, and then you just have this absurd amount of mana that you're just able to pump stuff into. And now with Urza Saga, you just have the ability to just keep pumping more of those constructs. I think the only thing I would have tweaked on the Urza Saga card would have been making it just make 2/2s rather than just constant like XXs, because it's making like 8/8s and 9/9s no problem. And you know, once your land makes two tokens, like an 8/8 and a 9/9, and then it goes and searches for Expedition Map to go get the next Urza Saga and then do it, make a 10/10 and 11/11, it's like whoa, like what's going on here? So I think that's where people are starting to get stressed out about the card. But in the first week where all of, like the decks came out, everybody was trying Urza Saga, and yes, it is a good card. Like, there's just no doubt about it.
Something interesting that I saw was that the tapped artifact lands are actually getting play.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them, too.
They're good. They're good cards. I mean, the reason why the artifact lands are banned in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because they're artifact. But those... now these are indestructible on top of it.
They come into play tapped, so like, which is a very real downside.
Mm-hmm. Not when you play a free artifact creature and just play Ringleaf Drum, stuff like that. It's just like, you can do so much. It, like, as long as you have one untapped land, the rest don't matter.
I don't like this build, JB.
On the Underworld Cookbook deck?
Asmarana Mardukai Destina Kuldakar?
You got it, man. I think that's how I have no way to verify if that's the way it's being said. Yeah, I'm not gonna challenge you.
Congratulations, man.
So JB, I know you've been playing this deck on MTGO. How do you like it?
Me?
No, I thought you were rocking this deck on MTGO.
Hell no. I haven't touched this deck at all.
Okay, my bad.
Josh,
this is the deck I like.
This is the one that Josh brought up.
I like this build because I like that Feasting Troll King card. I like the Trail of Clums. I like the... There's also the...
One Bloodcast?
I couldn't figure that out. I like the Cauldron Familiar and the Witch's Oven combo. I think this deck is...
Okay, standard.
I think you just jank them out.
So with the Underworld Cookbook decks, I've seen like 5 or 6 different variants of that style deck. Where, I mean, I've seen decks that play like Vengevine with it. Obviously, right. They're all playing the Asmor with it, but I understand why this deck's playing Bloodghast, because it gives you an ability to either, when you don't have a discard for the Asmor card, or you can just, you know, use your Bloodghast to use Bone Shards. Bone Shards is actually a really good card. That card is, I would argue that card's better than Lava Axe.
Pull up that Feasting Troll.
Not Lava Axe, what is it? Baby. Lava, what's the, Lightning Axe, not Lava. Lava Axe is unplayable. Lightning Axe.
Not in draft.
No, it is unplayable in draft. If you have Lava Axe in your deck, I you know what? I want you to fill your deck with 20 Lava Axes. And
I'll get you every time, bro.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You'll give me one Twin Cast.
JB, pull up Feasting Troll King and read this card if you guys don't know what it does. It's from Eldraine.
Yeah, it's the one where you sack 3 foods to bring it back from your graveyard, and when it enters from your hand, you create 3 food.
Yeah.
It's just a complete bulk rare that all of a sudden just overnight got better.
Yeah,
I have like 20 of those sitting in a box somewhere.
I need to get those from you because I want to build. This is the deck I think I want to build. I like it. This goes back to my EDH days.
Hold on.
I love discarding and graveyard shenanigans. That's just like Josh magic.
JB, tell me why you don't like discard.
I just think there are better options that get you more out of the other version of this deck that we were looking at. So yeah. Like Academy of Manufacturer makes you get a ton of extra mana well as draw cards, which I think is a much better option.
I think you should be playing both, because doesn't it... Hold on, can I read the Manufacturer real quick? Does it trigger per food?
Yes.
So you, with the Troll King and that, you get 9 tokens, 9 artifacts?
When you cast it from...
Oh, my bad. I thought... Okay, this card's much worse. Okay, this is just a 7.
You only get the food if you cast it.
For some reason, I thought this was ETB do that. Never mind, I don't like this card. I'm with you.
Yeah, that was my main reason, is just because it doesn't actually get you the food every time it enters. It only gets you it when you play it, and you're just not doing that with this deck. You're just cheating it in.
I think there's like a room to build this deck. There's got to be... The top version hasn't been figured out yet, but... I definitely feel like we should still be playing both.
Also, I really hate Trail of Crumbs. I think it's a bad card.
Yeah, I think that's the card that comes out, and you put that Academy dude in this deck.
I think that's a win more card. Like, this is there's different lists out there, and I think people are trying different things to see like what is the most optimal build. So I don't blame somebody trying Trail of Crumbs. I don't think it's good. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, the weird one.
All this deck runs Urza Saga also.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy auto include for this deck, just because you're in. What's so good with the cookbook, and you need the cookbook, and then it also grabs the Witch's Oven, which is obviously great. But the abilities it has to kind of work with Academy Manufacturer, just your cookbook and an Academy Manufacturer is just such gas. It just makes so much card advantage, and that's how you get these constructs to be like 10-10s and 12-12s on like turn 4 and 5. Like, I think people are really underestimating what that does. Not to mention the Asmor or whatever. Josh is going to try to say it again. Card is
Asmorana Mardukai Destina Kuldakar.
Yeah, sure. You got it.
Two.
So with that card, I think people don't realize how much food is being created. And then the fact that how that card is worded that you sack to, and then it does the creature deal it to itself?
Yeah, that's what's stupid about it.
It's like so bizarre. You don't target. Or do
it's
you target?
It's so good.
Oh no, you do target the creature, but it deals it to itself. What? This is such a bizarre card.
Huh. Not to mention, she's got some of the, like the best like references in Magic on some flavor texts, and this is just a flavor win out of the ballpark for the Vorthos, which I'm a Vorthos, I think.
What makes me laugh about this deck is if I opened more than half of these cards in a pack, they'd be in the trash. I'd just throw them away.
How many Cauldron Familiars and Witch's Ovens have you thrown?
I kept both those.
Oh, yeah, I have like 12 of each of those in a box.
I knew those. I mean, those Cauldron Familiar is legacy playable.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to look at that.
It's in the they replaced the Strix for the Alluren decks.
Oh.
Because you can return it with like, so you play Gildegoose. The problem is with the Strix, if you lost it, it was gone pretty much for good. With Gildegoose, you have the ability to bring it back and then just go infinite with the Alluren combo. Mm-hmm.
This deck doesn't play Gildegoose compared to the other one we were looking at.
I'm just saying like in Legacy for that. So like I kept that cat and it was so powerful and standard that, you know, it was. And then as far as Witch's Oven, yeah, it's just one of those cards I just kept because whatever reason. Yeah, this deck is gas, and I think a lot of people are struggling to deal with it, but honestly, some of the streams I have been watching with it, the deck can't just beat itself. The list that are playing, like, probably Feasting Troll King, if you end up with, like, too many of those in your hand, it's not good.
Right. Maybe play a couple of them. Yeah. This is, I think, the deck I'm going to end up building in the time between now and the fall.
Yeah. We have any hot other decks coming in?
I mean, I made this deck, and it's just a goofy
Delver.
Yeah, it's a goofy port of Blue-Red Delver from Legacy, but it's missing the Delver itself because it's not very good in Modern, and it doesn't really have the protection with Daze and Force of Will, which makes it a little tougher to play.
Why not Spell Pierce?
Not good enough. You need free spells.
Yeah.
So instead of running Daze, I have Counterspell in there. And then I use Opt and Thought Scour for draw and Thought Scour to just fill my bin so I can play Murktides cheap.
What about that cycling card that is also Daze for 2 mana?
I know what you're talking about.
Why would I pay Daze mana when I could just play Counterspell?
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm just saying if you're looking for more like a counter backup or whatever, more ideas, just bouncing
ideas. If this deck needed Phoenix.
This deck looks bad. The version you made is bad. Sorry, JB. There's actually a 5-0 Delver list, which is really surprising that has Murktides, Ragavans, and Delver. And then it just plays all value.
I know. Once I do really poorly with this for like 2 weeks, then I'll just switch over to it because the difference is like swapping out some rares for some uncommons that I have laying around already anyways.
Yeah.
I do like this like core build.
Seriously, that's the Delver deck. This is like the first iteration of Delver that I've seen be successful in Modern in like the last 5 years.
I think like ever. Your instants are fine. Your sorceries are fine.
We just banned Delver already. Just all formats, get rid of it.
So this deck... This deck, what it needs, JB, it needs subtlety, for sure. Just because subtlety is going to be so much value for this deck.
Yep, and that's what I was thinking, too, is I can take out the Young Pyromancer because it's not really that big of an issue, or the Snapcasters, possibly.
Yeah. See a Snapcaster. This is not a Snapcaster deck.
Mm-hmm.
I can say Azmor's name, but I can't say subtlety.
It's just subtlety. Just subtlety. It's a common word I use sometimes.
I'm like trying to pronounce the B and the T at the same time, and it's hard.
I know you were trying to. I heard it. It's just subtle. Subtle T. Just think of it like that.
Subtleties in life, bro.
Yeah, man. All right. So those are the decks that we kind of went over. I know there's infinite more decks out there, and there's more decks coming out day in and day out. So what I kind of want to get into is Urza's Saga. This is one of the things that the community are asking for is an early ban. So I'll just kind of my stance on it. I'm not a big fan of like early bans. I think that's always foolish. And especially because Urza's Saga is not. So comparing it to Hogak might be a mistake, but Hogak went into one style deck. And that deck was so dominant that decks that were playing main deck Rest in Peace still lost to Hogak. This deck Urza's Saga has spawned and given life to so many decks. We have Affinity that came back, Hardened Scales that came back, Colossal Hammer that's gotten a little power boost. I'm sure I'm forgetting other decks, but it's created so many, and then the Azmor deck, it's just created so many different archetypes. Whereas Like, when you look at a card like Urza Saga, I think of, like, Lightning Bolt. Lightning Bolt's in, like, 9 different decks. I'm not going to ban Lightning Bolt because it's a powerful card. 9 different decks play it? Great. Urza Saga? I mean, I've seen Blue-White List play it. It's just, people don't think have adjusted to it immediately. So right now, I think people are just like, wah, this card's difficult. I don't like playing against it. It's like, you got to adjust your main deck to it.
You just play Blood Moon.
Well, yeah, what if they put Wasteland in the Modern?
Well, then you ruin the format.
Don't put Wasteland into Modern. I was an advocate for a while, and then I realized how bad the format would become if you put in Wasteland.
It's terrible.
You couldn't play more than 2 colors, and 2 colors would even be, like, sketch.
Mm-hmm. You could. You just had to hope you didn't run into a Wasteland deck.
Right. But there's still, like, viable options with Ghost Quarter and Field of Ruin and stuff in Modern.
Those are just miserable cards. Like, Field of Ruin saw its day, and it's kind of being pushed out of the format. Just because. But, Field of Ruin's just not the card it once was.
I have no idea what's happening in Modern, clearly.
Yeah, it was good once, and, like, sure, maybe a straight dedicated blue-white deck will play it, but it's just not there anymore. Like, it's just a little bit too slow of a card. But with Urza Saga, I guess, does anybody here think it should be banned? Because it is popping up everywhere.
I don't think they should wait until, like, August before they ban something, but
I don't think they should ban anything from this set. I think Urza Saga is fine. Yes, it is in a lot of decks, like you said, but it's also bringing stuff back. I also think people haven't adjusted to the card yet. Like, all it takes is, like, maybe a dedication of, like, 2 or 3 sideboard cards, and problem solved. If it's played in every deck, you have sideboard cards for every deck, then at that point, like, there are so many ways to destroy it, too. It's a land, it's an enchantment, like, there's
Blood Moon just kills it.
You can literally play Subtlety and it doesn't do anything. Or what's the enchantment, the white one, where counters can't be put on something?
Oh, Solemnity?
Solemnity, yeah. Because then literally this card does nothing. It doesn't even tap for mana.
No, it's a blank. I mean, yep. Spreading Seas and both Blood Moon immediately kill it. And if people don't know how that interaction works, it's so weird how, like, lore counters work and how the saga... The only thing that makes this thing a land is that you can play it from your hand, honestly. Everything else is just an enchantment.
Yep.
But
weird.
Yeah, it just auto-dies, no matter how many counters it has on it.
I would have never intuitively thought that. I would have just
said, nobody did. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you would... Yeah, so when Blood Moon comes in, how Saga works is it refers to how many chapters it has left to resolve. So it's when Blood Moon comes in, you have 0 chapters. If you have anywhere from 0 to X amount of, or 0 plus counters, it sacks because you have no more chapters to resolve. It just... And it sacks based on state base. So if I play a Blood Moon, you say it resolves your Urza Saga. You don't have a time to, like, float mana with it for red. It goes right to the bin. There's no priorities passed. It just dies. Same with Spreading Seas.
Yeah, because it's a state based effect, right? Yep.
So before priority can be passed, all state based actions have to be resolved.
Mm-hmm. I just would have never thought about it.
Nobody thinks about it. Everybody thinks it comes as a mountain, and that's what I initially thought too. And it doesn't. It's actually much more severe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, turn 2 Blood Moon seems pretty good.
Just Blood Moon. I mean, if you could do, like, a Jeskai deck. Like, one of the things I've been thinking about playing is just a card called Rip Apart from...
Yep, the red-white one.
Yeah, what side is that? Anyways, it's red-white. Yeah.
From Strixhaven.
Yes, from Strixhaven. It's red-white, deal 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker, or the other mode is destroy target artifact or enchantment. And with how the format is lined up, you can kill constructs, you can kill Dryad of the Elysian Grove, which is a 2/4, you can kill Azusa's, so against your Primeval Titan decks, you kind of have that basic cover. You can kill Amulet, you can kill Urza Saga, you can kill a lot of all the Aether Vial decks that are cheating creatures, either the Aether Vial itself or the creatures it brings in. It just, like, hits everything. The only thing it's kind of, like, pretty weak against is Planeswalkers, but if people are still playing Jace the Mind Sculptor and they didn't plus it, you can still get the Jace with it. So it just has, like, this big range. The downside is, yes, it's sorcery and you have to be red-white, but I think that card is going to be Secret Tech if these decks are here to stay.
I think they're pushing red-white lately, and red-white's going to be really good in the next few months. Like,
I totally
really
forgot that this is being played in Amulet Titan. I was like, oh, yeah, they also play that. My God.
Cersei's for Amulet.
Yeah. Amulet's always already dominant before, so maybe that's not Urza Saga, but it might be one of those things where we don't want to see Urza Saga die for the sins of Primeval Titan.
Agreed.
Right.
Which, I don't know if we're there yet, but it could be. But I just give people a weekend. honestly, because we haven't had to play this in paper yet. And even the following week after, like, this FNM is going to be probably a draft-related FNM. The following FNM is going to be still people acquiring cards. It's going to be about a month before we actually see the impact in paper play. So during that time, there's going to be a lot of innovation, hopefully, on Magic Online. And we have already seen that. So the first week was, like, all Urza Saga. And now this week, it's just purely Yragavan. And, man, that card, like, it was easy to call it as the best card. One, it's a 2/2/1 mythic that has a dumb amount of text on it, but it's just popping up everywhere now in modern, which is, I think, counteracting the Urza Saga deck, because, you know, if you can't play Urza Saga on turn one, I think people are starting to realize that you can, but it kind of comes at a real cost, because you sacrifice the land, and yes, you could go get a beneficial artifact, but it does come at a real cost. It's more of a turn two play. And if I'm going turn one Yragavan and you're going like turn two not a blocker, I'm probably going to destroy you in that game.
Yep.
And that allows you to play the turn two Blood Moon,
anything, like, you name it, like, just it just ramps you, take card advantage off of them, whatever. So I think that's going to be the secret card, and I don't think people have run into that, especially because of the cost of what Yragavan is on Magic Online. Like, it's like 100 some tickets.
It's really hard to get it.
And nobody, like, all the trade bots or the rental services can't keep them in stock. So whatever exists on the market now is very limited. And as that grows and people are just going to acquire them and keep them in their collection forever, you're just going to see real punishment. I've heard some really nonsensical things. I've been reading some forums of somebody like renting Yragavan so other people can't get Yragavan so they can play their deck.
That's so bogus. That's
it's like, I'll just keep this in my collection so I can play my fun decks, because there's just such a, it takes away a Yragavan from a player.
Is Yragavan better than Deathrite Shaman?
I think they're two different styles of cards.
I don't know. It's actually a hard question, because if with what Yragavan is doing in both Modern and Legacy, it's hard to say. I mean, Deathrite was absolutely everywhere, but Yragavan is already being fueled. Like, it's a natural fit to a deck that was already arguably like problematic. Enough about Yragavan. JB, I know you wanted to say something about what was it again?
I just figured that we would talk about the top three prices currently for cards in the set for, like, regular printings. And it seems like Yragavan, the Urza Saga, and then, surprisingly, Dathui, right? Dathui?
Dathui.
I'm an idiot. I can never say it right. Dathui is, like, the highest at the moment, which is super weird to me. I just didn't expect Dathui to be that high up, right?
I mean, I kind of did. Did you read that card? It says cast Emrakul on turn three or cast Ulamog on turn three before Tron can.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about the Ephemerate Grief deck, and that deck is really strong.
We also didn't talk about the Scion of Draco deck.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty nuts, too.
I saw that deck, like, surprisingly fizzle, though. Because, like, you dump your, another deck where you vomit your hand on turn two, and, like, you're either winning or you're not.
That sounds like your standard Zoo deck, and it just doesn't. It's Zoo, but with upgraded pieces, but still not powerful enough because Zoo doesn't have any way to, like, accumulate card advantage.
Right, you do 11 damage or like 11, 12 damage to yourself by turn two. You just die to two lightning bolts.
So what was that list again? It was Yragavan.
Yragavan, Urza Saga, and then Dathui Voidwalker.
Yeah, I think Dathui Voidwalker is just one of those cards that people are. One, it's probably going to get played more in Legacy more than Grief will. And then it kind of combines really well with Grief. So if you're going to have a set of Griefs, you probably need a set of Dathui. So that's just like those cards go hand in hand. And the fact that Dathui guy is also an EDH bomb, like, people are going to want that card all day. All right. I got a question for you guys. I kind of gave you guys a little bit of heads up so you could think on it. But what card do you think they could have ported from Legacy into Modern Horizons 2?
True Name Nemesis.
All right. Josh has True Name. Why is that?
Plague Engineer exists, and I don't think it'd be any more like what was the last set that came out that went to Modern? There was a leak somewhere before. It was the Time Spiral, maybe, that True Name, or no, it wasn't that, but there was a leak before where True Name Nemesis was supposedly going to come to Modern. People already assumed it would be coming. A lot of the times when I'm deck building, I think it is, especially recently when I was like looking at if I could just play my Legacy deck in Modern. And I have to keep telling myself but that it's not legal in Modern. It definitely could. Plague Engineer exists. They just printed Dam. There's more like readily available Wraths. I don't think it would be anything oppressive.
Yeah, I just wonder if there would be a headache with it. But, I mean, that card doesn't seem that powerful in Legacy anymore, especially because, like, we are in a day, like, world where, like, sac effects are more prevalent. And they actually just made a better, like, sac effect, which has Split Second, a better Diabolic Edict.
See, even you had answers that I couldn't even think of, and I want to play the card.
JB, what do you got?
I think I would prefer if they just printed straight up Rashad and Port instead of the fake version we got.
I said that when we were... Didn't I say that in like the first podcast even?
Possibly.
I said maybe is Rashad and Port in Modern? I thought it was, but through the master sets or whatever, but yeah. I agree. There's no reason why I can't get in there.
Yeah, it's not that strong. I think it would be fine in Modern as a way to play more tax deck stuff.
I wanted to put Wasteland in the format.
Dude, that's just not viable. Like you could port it in there and then just destroy what exists.
So?
Yeah, I know. You're all about, like, I don't play Modern, but I want all my legacy cards to be Modern playable, so I can just play that. Instead of Volcanics, I got Steam Vents. All right, Jeff, what do you got?
I feel like no one's going to agree with me, but I've always been an advocate that I think Fire Blast should be a Modern.
Yeah.
I think it would be fine. Mm-mm. You're sacking two mountains, like, it's only one more damage than a bolt.
Yeah, you think it's one more damage? It's more of a double play. That's the real problem with the card. It's a free play.
What about Price of Progress, or do you think that's too good?
No,
that one's really close to.
No, that's fine.
It's Tax, close.
Punish them. I think you should punish them. There should be
We're playing Shocklands. We're already getting punished. Like, come on.
Yeah, your lands are already dealing damage.
There's already
honestly. I also think Mom is something that could be a Modern.
They already made like a functional reprint of it, or not functional, but like a different version of it. It's a 1/2 instead of it. And Giver of Ruins is almost the same thing, except it can't protect.
Yeah, it can't protect itself.
Yeah, but it has the same Omni Urchin. You have two of them, so it's kind of already there.
Right. When Fury was spoiled, I thought it said creature or player.
That'd be insane.
And I was like, I remember I posted. I was like, they just fundamentally changed the game, boys and girls.
Well, because think about it then. At that point, Legacy would have two free red spells. Like, that'd be even crazier. I don't think they could add another Fire Blast.
You got Fire Blast and Gutshot. Those are two free red spells right there, man. What else you need?
Gutshot is terrible.
It's not terrible. It's very...
You are paying more life to cast it than you're dealing.
So the card I thought of, and it's one of those things that's always been debated. I always think they should just get Goblin Lackey in Modern.
Agreed.
I think it's completely fine. Like, the format's not in a play. Like, the best, you can't even get, what's the...
You can't put Moxus in play, so it's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to put it in, what, Siege Gang, you're like, oh, okay.
Congrats.
You did it.
Wow. Welcome to 1999.
Yeah,
you do have Recruiter, so that's kind of nice, because I think the Recruiter... Was that always in Modern? I know I got a reprint in like M20 or in one of the core sets. I know that, but I don't remember if it was in Modern before that. I don't think it was.
Mm-mm. Which card?
Goblin Recruiter got reprinted in like M20 or something. So it's Goblin Recruiter is legal in
Modern. That's the one where you can stack your deck, right?
No, that's a different card. No. You look at the top four. It's top four, and you put all goblins in your hand.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, Goblin Ringleader.
Right.
You got the name wrong. It's Goblin Ringleader.
It's Ringleader, yeah. Goblin,
what the hell is Recruiter is the one where you literally can stack your deck in any way with goblins.
Oh yeah, never mind. Not that one. Goblin Ringleader, that's the one I'm thinking of. That's,
yeah,
that's
it was reprinted in M20.
Yeah. Alright, dudes. Anybody got anything to sign off with?
Look forward to FNM. I have
5 fetch lands in my draft pool and I'm gonna take them all.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, I'm glad where those kind of have come down to.
Someone's going to pass me a fetch land at draft.
I'll pass you the fetch lands because I'm going to be opening Ragavans.
That's fine. I'll take that. I need Verdance.
I was about to say, I'm looking forward to being the only guy with the 4 play set of Ragavan ready to go on Friday.
I borrow you one?
Yeah.
I watch everybody cry. That's like
the wallet you have there, bud.
Yeah. The salt that people get is like, hey, I want to play a deck that wins. Do you have a problem with that? And they're like, yeah, you spent too much money to win. It's like, well, I don't know if you heard about this.
Just play Burn, because then you just don't care.
All right, guys. We're on Facebook. Give us a look at our page. Give us a like. Follow us on Twitter. We'll give you updates on our episodes. And feel free to send questions to our podcast at paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, dude. Get that music. Get it rolling.
Suggest a beer to me, and I'll drink it.